It's a very important topic as far as learning Kabbalah. It happens to also be a major topic in the world of Machshava. In the Shiurim on Friday, so we try to work off of a different sefer each year, and I try to the best of my ability to choose Sfarim that don't have as much overlap in topics. So Mesilas Yesharim doesn't have that much overlap with Kuzari. They all obviously speak about certain things, but the major sort of Yesodos, there's less overlap. Chet HaEgel is one that is a little bit tricky to not come back to. The Nefesh HaChaim speaks about Chet HaEgel from one perspective. That was the first year of Shiurim. We spoke about then, and this is just to give a little bit of background, the impact of Chet HaEgel. That Chet HaEgel, Rashi writes in his Perush Al Torah, unlike the Ramban. But Rashi writes that Chet HaEgel is really what caused the entire existence of a Mishkan. Had there not been a Chet HaEgel, there wouldn't have needed to be a certain kind of a reality called a Mishkan or a Mikdash. And that sort of showed, that sort of clarified the need for something like a Mishkan. And that, again, the Ramban doesn't learn that way. That's how Rashi understands it. The Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim Volozhiner understands that the act of the Chet HaEgel is one of the things that sort of radically impacted the nature of our being. It brought a certain kind of Yetzer Hara to be part of us. It brought, just like the Chet of Eitz Hadas, it brought a certain kind of Yetzer Hara to become, to impact us from the inside, whatever it is that means. And Chazal understand that it could be that every sin that Klal Yisrael performs has a little bit of a shmek, has a little bit of a taste of Chet HaEgel within it. Chet HaEgel is not just a regular sin. Chet HaEgel is a sin that radically altered so much of Klal Yisrael. In that sense, it happens to be similar to the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. The Chet Eitz Hadas was, for mankind, what the Chet HaEgel was for the Jewish people. And many of the Baalei Machshava connect those two sins, the Chet of Adam and the Chet of Klal Yisrael, the Chet HaEgel. And one kind of a discussion is to just explore a little bit the impact, what exactly was done as a result of Chet HaEgel. How that changed things. How the world is a little bit different in a world post Chet HaEgel. The discussion that most of the Rishonim have, though, is not that. Discussion the most Rishonim is what exactly was the sin of the Chet HaEgel. Okay, we know it was bad and we know it was transformative, but what exactly was the Chet? What I want to try to do today is to develop, I think, four Mahalchim as to what the Chet of Chet HaEgel actually was. The first Mahalch that we're going to speak about is the Mahalch of Rashi in his Perush Al Torah. The second Mahalch will be that of the Ramban with a bit of Meshech Chachma. The third Mahalch will be the Kuzari with a little bit of Beis Halevi. And the fourth will be what I think is such a beautiful insight of Rav Moshe Wolfson, Mashgiach Torah V'Das. It's something which I was zocha in when I was, I think my last year or two in YU. I used to learn one night a week with Ari Mirzoff. We would learn, Rabbi Ari Mirzoff, we would learn late at night the Emunah Tach of Moshe Wolfson. And I remember coming across this idea. It was the highlight of my week, that Havrusa, aside from, you know, obviously my marriage and my children. I remember coming back always on such a high. I remember that we saw this word in Parshas Parra, and it was such a beautiful insight of Moshe Wolfson. And I saw something also late last night, Post Eitan Katz. I saw a beautiful insight also of Lady Yitzhak, and hopefully we'll be able to develop a little bit. Rashi understands the Chet was nothing other than a Chet of Avodah Zarah. We spoke a lot about Avodah Zarah last week, in terms of the source for Avodah Zarah, the Rambam and the Ramban and a little bit of Rav Wolbe. But Avodah Zarah, says Rashi, that's what it really was. There are definitely indications in the Psukim that that's what's going on here. If you look in source number 4, the Psukim there in Shmos Lamed Beis, V'emru'i lav kuma selanu Elohim asher yelchul lefaneinu, that they're asking for, we need to have a God that's going to walk in front of us. But we need to have another God. When they make it finally, V'yaseyu eigo maseicha, so the positive, V'yomru eil Elohecha Yisrael asher alucha me'aret Mitzrayim. This is the God that took you out of Mitzrayim. What it is nothing else, says Rashi here, if you look in source number 5. Says Rashi, this is nothing else than a terrible chet of Avodah Zarah. Now, there are a lot of questions on this Mahalach. There are a lot of questions. One question that comes up is, how is that possible? The Beis Halevi asks this kasha. How is it possible that Klal Yisrael, that just witnessed Maimon Har Sinai, that Klal Yisrael, that were on such a spiritual high from the Yom Suf that we're encountering in this week's Parsha, so how is it possible that Klal Yisrael messes up and that Klal Yisrael engages in a chet like Avodah Zarah? For that reason, there are many that will reinterpret the psuk. It can't be that's a sin. The sin has to be something else. There are others who are bothered by the fact, how could it be that Aaron HaKohen seems to be an accomplice in this? How could it be that if it's a chet of avodah zarah, that Aaron HaKohen is somebody who is, at least seems to be, participating, sanctioning, he seems to be someone who is involved on some level, but on any level. If it's a chet of avodah zarah, how is that possible that Aaron HaKohen is going to be the person who's going to be somewhat involved? I'll just share with you a brief thought, though I can't prove this at all. I think we completely referenced last week a little bit. The Psukim in Sefer Yechezkel describe, and this is something we showed him speak about, the Rambam quotes in a couple of places, that Klal Yisrael, when they were in Egypt, Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim, worshipped Avodah Zarah. Klal Yisrael, the Rambam writes there, even were over on Gilei Arayos. If we understand that sometimes the image we have of Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim is Shloshinu es Lashonam, Shloshinu es Shmam, they were very separate and very distinct and very holy. But sometimes the indication that we get, and they both may be true, that Klal Yisrael, that the Memtesh Shari Tumah, Klal Yisrael being Ovid of Zara and the like. If you understand that, and this is an important idea, if you understand that Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim were people that were really struggling, Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim, those were people that had very spiritual loads. So please understand the following. A lot of what happens to Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, at least I think it's not that difficult to suggest, it is a nation that's going through a religious process of growth. These are people, that part of the makos, the way that some of the Rishonim understand is to show Klal Yisrael, to rebuild Shalom, to strengthen their emunah and things like that. It's definitely possible that part of what happens for Klal Yisrael, it's like any time you have someone who's at a real low, and the Zohar says, your mentesh shari, anyone's at a real low, and they start getting into things, is always going to have, you know, their ups and their downs. It's always going to be a process. Growth, we would always like growth to be sort of this like linear, you're going straight up, and it's all simple, and it's all easy. We would always want growth to be like that. We would always want the process of redemption, of geula, to be like that. Of this just like straightforward, it's all going to be good, and everything is great. One of the challenges of growth, be it individually or collectively, is that it never works that way. It never works that way. We always have ups and downs as part of the way that the world is created. And there's always going to be a little bit of struggle. And if you want to just work api pshat, if Klal Yisrael is being over to Zara here, you have to understand, this is a group that was in Mitzrayim, and Mamash, they were in a very, very bad place. And they're being taken out, and they're being brought to Imam Har Sinai, and they're witnessing a Kriyas Yam Suf, which is also incredibly special and incredibly inspiring. But to understand a little bit that what Klal Yisrael's had ups and downs. And people have ups and downs are going to have, you know, a relapse here or there. They're going to fall a little bit here or there. Not that we ever plan on doing that, but to understand a little bit the perspective of Klal Yisrael. When they don't see Moshe Rabbeinu, they get nervous. And when you get nervous, sometimes you turn back to that which you do naturally, that which you were brought up with, or that which you feel comfortable with. And at that time, that's sort of their reaction a little bit. And that's sort of the first mahalach. The first mahalach is that Klal Yisrael were really Ovid Avodah Zarah. Klal Yisrael were Ovid Avodah Zarah because they just... It's where they were at. It's where they were at that time. They had a spiritual high, but a spiritual high in one moment need not at all mean that a person can't have a spiritual drop the next. That's something that it's always possible. And that's something which is just important to keep in mind a little bit. The second mahalach, again, as we're focusing this year a bit on the Ramban, the second mahalach is mahalach of the Ramban. The Ramban has other implications. Again, we're trying to make them a little bit relevant. For Rashi, part of the message is the ability to know that people can have ups and downs. Stam sometimes get chizik from that, and sometimes to make sure that we are therefore going to prevent ourselves from falling into some of those traps. The Ramban in this Peirush HaTorah Torah understands things a little bit differently. There's no Avodah Zarah here. The Ramban has a lot of diukim. This is a ha'ara in Pshuto Shel Mikra. The Ramban says there was no Avodah Zarah really going on here. Look at the Psukim. What Klal Yisrael is really looking for is not another God, but rather another Moshe. They lost Moshe Rabbeinu. They lost their leader. And because they lost their leader, what really happened? They didn't think Moshe was God. So why would the absence of Moshe make them create a new God? They didn't think Moshe was God. They didn't think that Moshe was one who did the miracles. They knew of course Baruch Hu did it. They wanted a different Moshe. Amru Moshe Shaholam Laderach Mitzrayim Vadheina. We need leadership. And Hinei Avad Mimenu. We've lost that leader. Na'asalanu Moshe Acher, Sheyorah Derech Lefaneinu, Afi Hashem Biyado. V'zeh Atam Iskir Moshe Isha Sheheilanu, Loa Kehel Asher Ha'alam, Kistarchul Isha Lo. What Klal Yisrael was scared of when they lost Moshe Rabbeinu, Klal Yisrael was scared by not having a leader. Klal Yisrael was scared that they lost Moshe Rabbeinu. They weren't scared that they didn't misunderstand what the Ribbono Shel Olam offers. They have a very good idea of what Hashem really is trying to provide for them. What they lost was Moshe. Aval inyan kmo she'amarti shel bikshu ha'egel hiyos lahem lakel meimis u'mechai. They weren't looking for the egel to be a god. That's foolish. They saw God at Yam Suf. They saw God at Maamar Har Sinai. Aval yirtu she'el lahem b'makom Moshe moret darkam. V'chein haya hadavar. He said, that's pshat. What happens? When Moshe comes down, they leave the egel. When Moshe comes, they were looking for a substitute Moshe. Moshe doesn't come down and give them mussar for anything. Because Moshe's very presence clarifies for them the severity of the mistake. The mistake was that they wanted a new Moshe. Now the advantage of the Ramban is that we understand the problem of Klal Yisrael. We know how they could get there. They weren't worshiping Avodah Zarah. Klal Yisrael wanted a new Moshe. The challenge for the Ramban is I don't necessarily understand why it's so severe. Sometimes when if you want to explain how Klal Yisrael could mess up, so what's so severe about this chet? What's so terrible about wanting a new leader? We all want, in a certain sense, leadership. We all want, in a certain sense, someone that we can look up to. That's why when leaders mess up, it's so challenging. The reason why it's hard when leaders mess up is because we want to believe in them. Is that we want someone to help us and to give us a little bit of insight. I'll share with you a quick part in the parsha. It's because it's a parsha. We say in davening every day. I think it's a nice insight. V'aminu b'Hashem of Moshe Avdo. That you are supposed to believe in Hashem and believe in Moshe. So Chazal are sensitive to the strange diuk. V'aminu b'Hashem, l'chora is very, very good. And Moshe Avdo. If you believe in Hashem, what's like the added chiddush of like you also believe in Moshe Rabbeinu? You believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Isn't that good enough? What's the added level of emunah in Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Chos of Lublin has the following shot. I'm taking away some of the Hasidic elements of it to make it more palatable for some of us. V'aminu b'Hashem uf Moshe Avdo, I think it's a beautiful insight. Belief in God is so critically important. V'aminu b'Hashem. But says the Chosev, a person who has belief in God often doesn't know how to channel it. A lot of people believe, but are unable to have that emunah transform the way they live their lives the most effective way possible. V'aminu b'Hashem uf Moshe Avdo, Klal Yisrael at Yam Suf didn't only believe in Hashem. They believed in an effective leader. They believed in a leader that could guide them and help them worship Hashem as effectively as possible. They believed in someone that could guide them. And the need for leadership is something that a person always needs for success. Obviously, in the Lashon of the Chosev, leadership, you're talking about the tzaddik, and you're talking about it in a slightly different way. But what you're getting here for the Ramban is a little bit of a mistake. It is looking for leadership in the wrong place. The Meshech Chachma elaborates on a very similar idea, but he views the problem in a slightly different way. Meshech Chachma says, and this happens all the time, this is, by the way, also one of the reasons why when leaders fall, as we spoke about at a Shabbaton, when leaders fall, it's so hard for us. Says Meshech Chachma, because sometimes we forget something. Says Meshech Chachma, all holiness in this world is rooted in one place, and that is God and His Torah, too. Because Rechel V'Raisa Chad Hu. It's rooted in one place, God and His Torah. That's where all holiness is. The reason why something is holy, that's similar to the Nefesh HaChaim idea, Shef was very fond of Tashmishei Kedusha. Torah is the source of all real Kedusha in this world. That's why the Aron had to be in the Mikdash. The Aron generates Kedusha in the Mikdash because there's Torah inside the Aron. Torah is the source of all Kedusha. What often happens? So Torah has the ability to bring Kedusha to a lot of different places. The mistake you can sometimes make, says the Meshech Chachma, this is very similar to what we saw last week, a bit, in the Rambam and the Ramban, is that you can start attributing Kedusha to inherent Kedusha, to those things that don't really have it. So you can look at a Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is not inherently holy. Moshe Rabbeinu is holy because of his connection to God and his knowledge of Torah. And what can happen sometimes is that you can make the mistake of viewing certain people not as shlichim, but as inherently having a certain amount of Kedusha. So what happens, says Meshech Chachma, what happens is the following. Klal Yisrael looks at Moshe Rabbeinu, but they fail to understand who Moshe Rabbeinu really... Moshe Rabbeinu is a guy. Moshe Rabbeinu is a person. Moshe Rabbeinu is not inherently kadosh. Moshe is kadosh because he elevated himself through connecting to God and God's Torah. So part of the problem of Klal Yisrael was, and almost like an in-between pshat of Rashi and Rabban, they misinterpreted. They misinterpreted what exactly was going on here. Moshe brought us up. No, Moshe didn't bring you up. Moshe was a shliach of Ribono Shel Olam. Stop focusing on the messenger and focus on what's really behind it. Or the way we saw last week in the Rambam, stop focusing on Teva and focus the Rambam on what's behind Teva. Don't just, as the Rav said, look at the closed system of science, but look at what's behind science. What gets it started and what generates it. That's what it's about. Your nation's destroying it. They think that you're something else. They think that you're something else. It says, that's a special idea. It's an important idea. To never get caught up, much as V'aminu B'Hashem of Moshe Avdo, a person without good leadership, a person without good mentoring, a person without good rebbeim, a person without those who can help them succeed in life, is never really going to be able to. But at the same time, don't attribute too much value to those people. They're shlichim. They're kadosh because they have more Torah. They're kadosh because they all go back to Ribono Shel Olam. But it's never about them. It's always them being shlichim. It's always them being messengers of Ribono Shel Olam. Elevated for sure. Kadosh for sure, but always by virtue of their connection to Ribono Shel Olam. To understand that that's what gives Kedusha. It's always about Hashem. It's less about sometimes the fallout. Sometimes the fallout of some of the other things. And I think that's an important idea. Rashi, the Ramban, and the Meshech Chachma. This is something which is Avodah Zarah, or looking for Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the second idea. The Meshech Chachma points out, and that's why in Avodah Hashem, don't rely too much on intermediaries. Don't rely too much on intermediaries. He's talking there about davening. That's an idea that you have, the Rambam, you can look at him. Daven to Hashem, don't daven through his conduit. Don't daven through someone else. Daven to Hashem directly. I'm very fond of the comment of the Meiri in Baba Basra. The Gemara says in Baba Basra that if you have a chol in your house, go to a chacham to daven. Go to a chacham to daven. The simple pshat is go to a chacham and ask a chacham to daven for you. The Meiri says go to a chacham so he can teach you how to daven. You daven to Hashem. The chacham will teach you how to do so. There's obviously a notion, this is, we pass in Lach Lavaisa, Moshe Nigger Smoke, we go to Chacham to daven for us. But you daven directly to Hashem. You have a direct route to Ribono Shel Olam. Someone else can also have a direct route, which is great, but never to confuse those things. We have that capacity for a direct kind of relationship, and that's something which is very, very powerful, and something which is worthwhile us embracing. I would mention as an aside, a similar kind of an idea. It's the way that we learn Morning Seder. The way we learn Morning Seder is not, should not, and we try to structure things this way, is never relying on the person in the front of the room. I'm learning Morning Seder trying to understand the Mar Makom on my own. I'm learning Morning Seder trying to develop what I think the Machloka is between Tobas and the Ramban on my own. I'll come to Shir and we'll get guidance, we'll, maybe new ideas, we'll get all different ways of viewing things. More information, there are a lot of things we can get, but a lot of it is the extent to which we believe ourselves. We are mekablim solely. You have to be mekabel. But if we're only about receiving from others, and that direct, sort of personal, active way of doing it isn't there, so in some level, we've missed out a little bit. The third mahalach is that of the Kuzari. Yehuda Levi and the Kuzari, was just we had, I think 2 years ago, we had our Friday shiurim on the Kuzari. It was, happens to have enjoyed it immensely. Yehuda Levi. This is a very important idea in the Beis HaLevi, in his Peirush HaTorah and Parshas Kisisa. That's where it stops, I think, right? Parshas Kisisa is the last week in Beis HaLevi HaTorah. Is that? Yeah. What? That's the Maisa, about the doctor.
Yeah.
He read the Peirush HaTorah because the doctor said that it wasn't healthy for him to learn so much Gemara and things like that. He said, okay, I guess it's too intense, so I'll write a Peirush in Chumash. And he got the Parshas Kisisa, and the doctor said, okay, you're good to go. So, there goes that for the Peirush. So, let's, I guess he got this one in right before. I guess the story's true. The Kuzari, Rita Levi, offers the following idea. And I think this is so... I experience this a little bit with my children sometimes, just to clarify. Shira has had a phase, less recently, but a little bit ago, where she was very into the question, is it real or not? She's watching something on... Let's say she's watching something on the computer, let's say. Erev Shabbos. She's watching something on the computer. And she wants to know, like, is that real or not? It's hard to know sometimes what exactly she's referring to. A cartoon is definitely not real. If it's real people, I don't know, like, she's old enough now, but like with the kids, like, are they like in the computer? Like, how does that work exactly? Like, is it real or not? So she would say sometimes, you know, like, you'll make a joke and say, oh, is that real or is it not real? So at times, I remember her asking the question, okay, but like, tell me for real, like, is Hashem real or not real? Because Hashem has some of the qualities of things that we sometimes refer to as not being. You can't really see it. It's not tangible. And sometimes a child who's sort of learning the difference between real and not real can struggle a little bit trying to clarify. So I know that this isn't real. But is this real? Is this real? One of the great challenges in Avodas Hashem is that, like, we don't see God. God, the way the Rambam writes it, God doesn't have a body. Right? That's what we assume. There's no guf. Ain't lo guf, ain't lo muslim. So it's very, very hard sometimes to connect if you can't see it. You ever think for a second how much easier davening would be if, like, he was just right in front of you and you're asking for things? Wouldn't Rifa'inu just be, like, a little bit different if it was, like, right there and I could see it? Wouldn't, like, Atachonil Adam Das, I'm davening for some kind of intellect, I'm davening for a certain kind of success and learning, or segula for remembering my learning for some achor. Wouldn't that be like a little bit different if, like, I really felt that right in front of me is standing Ribono Shel Olam? Wouldn't it be different? The Piazetzner even writes in B'nei Machshava Tova, an amazing chiddush. The Rav in Hilchos Tshuva argues with the Rambam and says that at least, he says, Rambam, one who believes that God has a body is not a heretic. Gedolim v'tovim imcha, people greater than you thought that God did have a body. That's a little bit of a larger shaila. The Pizetzner writes B'nei Machshava Tova, I'm not sure we would do this halach l'maisa, but he writes, I think, based on the comment of Chovos Halvavos, that if a person wanted to imagine that God had a body, just for a little bit, to strengthen their davening, that would even be okay. A recognition of the enormous challenge. I'm not saying that we should do that. You're playing around with Yigal Mekarim. You speak to someone that's a person qualified to assess that kind of a question. But it's one of the great challenges we have in Avodas Hashem. We can't see it. I would add, we don't really get feedback either. We don't really get feedback. Wouldn't you want to know right now, just like, okay, on the mitzvah aveira chart, like, can I just get like a little bit of insight into how I'm doing? Wouldn't that be nice? I'm saying, I mean, it's a little cynically and it's a joke, but you find out you're like, you're in a really good place. So like, take a day off. You find out that you're really not doing well. You gotta really step up. Wouldn't it be really nice if you knew like what the punishment was? You could just check sometimes. You know, it's like on your cell phone. You can check the battery, like how much is left and like how I'm doing, and you will therefore, you know, plan what I'm gonna do, what I'm not gonna do on my phone based on how much battery is left. I can't do this stuff right now because I gotta start saving the bat. Wouldn't that be great if you could just know sometimes like how I'm doing? You know, I don't know. It's a hard thing. On the one hand, like tittis, like every second's a mitzvah. On the other hand, like Eretz Yisrael, Gaval, what a beautiful mitzvah. Every second, my son tells me that all the time. On the other hand, I don't know. There's some of my favorites like doing. It looks like we take things like really seriously. Borer is like skila. I mean, with like a hasra, kabbalas hasra, adedim. But I'm saying it's like this is pretty serious stuff. Wouldn't you want to know how you're doing? One of the challenges of Avodas Hashem also is that we have less clarity in terms of how we're actually doing. So we worship a God that we can't see and that we can't touch and that does not communicate to us directly in the way that we would sometimes want. That's a great struggle, one of the great struggles of religion. So what do you want if you want to succeed in religion? So one of the things that's often very, very helpful is having something tangible that can remind me of that. Having something tangible, something that I can touch, that I could see, that's able to remind me, that's able to give me something to be able to work with. That's one of the reasons why, for again, if you want it in terms of Hasidus, the role of the tzaddik, if you want it in the more litvish world, as Hashem Elokei Chatira, as the Rabbos Tamidi Chachamim, that we look sometimes for people. Now the Ramban saying go directly. Forget about worse. No, we need something in front of us sometimes. It would be so much more helpful and so much easier if we had something in front of us sometimes. So that's what we want and that's what we desire. That's in many ways what the Mishkan came to be. The Mishkan came to be something physical, a place where you would have a tangible representation of Ribono Shel Olam. That's in many ways part of the link. The possibly for the Arayim and for others, the Doraisa idea of a shul is also that in a certain sense. A shul is a tangible place where I connect to God more. God, he's not, is he more there? Hashem is here, Hashem is there. You know, he's everywhere. But there's something about a tangible place that brings a heightened sense of Kiddush and helps us a lot. That's the Mishkan and the Mikdash. That's what the Egel was meant to be. The Egel was meant to be. I know there's a Ribbono Shel Olam, but wouldn't it be great if we could have something in our world that we could touch that represented God for us? Wouldn't it make Avodas Hashem so much easier? Wouldn't it all be sort of a little bit simpler if there was something there right in front of us all the time that we could focus on and we could think about and that we could just touch and that we could know that I see how I'm worshiping it and how it has a direct result on some level, whatever that means? What? Wouldn't that be better? And that was what the motivation of Chet HaEgel was. Viewed from that perspective, Chet HaEgel makes a lot of sense. Chet HaEgel is no different than the idea than the eight that we quoted from the Pizetzner. Chet HaEgel is no different, essentially, than what we have on... it's no different than what we have in a Mishkan or a Mikdash. It's no different than what we daven for every single day, V'li Yerushalayim Yircha. It's no different at no difference at all. So what was the problem of Chet HaEgel? What was the problem of Chet HaEgel? The problem of Chet HaEgel was the following, says the Kuzari. And Mr. Levy has a very similar idea. Great idea. One major flaw. God did not command it. The problem, says the Kuzari, was the absence of a tzivoy from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Avodas Hashem, says the Kuzari, and this is an important idea, although one that not all, you can't take to its extreme. But one that if you want to sort of innovate in a major way in Avodas Hashem, if you really want to innovate in Avodas Hashem in a significant way, so please understand, says Rabbi Yehuda Levi, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us what to do. He gave us tzivuyim. And follow those tzivuyim. When God commanded the Mishkan is not that different from Chet HaEgel in terms of its function. The major chiluk was one of them God commanded us to do and one of them he didn't. Often in Avodas Hashem, we have to just remind ourselves of that second part. It's Avodas Hashem. That who dictates the ground rules? Who dictates how we do things? The Ribbono Shel Olam is the one that dictates how we do things. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the one that dictates some of the ground rules. And it's going to be very hard. And
isn't it ironic that that's not be wrong?
So one of the questions that you're going to have, one of the questions you have to sort of relate to a little bit is, so what room is there, I would say, for some of the personal creativity? What room is there for some of the personal sort of taking your own, doing things that are not necessarily, Tzivuyim spoke about weeks ago, B'nai Saskar was inside, Nigut Kal, of Shomer Nafshi Kichasin Ani. Sometimes you can find Avodas Hashem not only in Tzivuyim, but that's a very important idea. A good barometer sometimes of if something is good or not good, is there a tzivoy to do it? It's at least a good first barometer. It's a good first question to ask. Is there a tzivoy? Is there not a tzivoy? If there's no tzivoy, so that here there's not only no tzivoy, there's a tzivoy not to make idols. There's a tzivoy not to make certain forms. You think you have great intent, but it's against the tzivoy. And that's something which you have to sort of keep in mind a little bit. Avodas Hashem being something that the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's something that Hashem commands me to do. And it's something which, that's what gives it its meaning. The command from the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the perspective of the Kuzari. There's a lot more to talk about. But I want to move on to an idea of Moshe Wolfson. I find this idea to be such a good insight. And we'll explain what you think based on it. Moshe Wolfson is the Mashkiach of Yeshivas Torah V'Das. Rabbi Shafkin spoke earlier in the week about how Rabbi Shaka Feivel was one of the first to bring the Torah of Rabbi Tzadok and the Torah of Chassidus to America, especially the Torah of Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Shaka Feivel, the Torah V'Das was founded as an attempt to bring together the best of Litvish learning with some of the heart of Torah of Chassidus. So Rabbi Shaka Feivel is teaching, and out of the box, he's teaching the Torah of Hirsch, teaching the Torah of teaching the Tanya, he's teaching, which is very unique for a yeshiva that has some of the great Litvish Gedolim as Rosh Yeshiva. Dr. Kamenetsky, you know, Rebelsky, the current yeshiva, Hashem Yishlach L'Refua Shleima, that is in critical condition, and God has all the moments for his Refua. But there's something, Tervadas is Rav Pam, is an exceptionally impressive, and from Haim in the old way back. So Rav Moshe Wolfson is the Mashgiach of Torah V'Das, and he is one of the more his Torah is sweet, his Torah is so sharp wild gematria, wild. It's so it's flying. You're flying as you learn his Torah sometimes. So he has a bunch of svarim out there. There's three volumes of Emunah Sitacha on Chumash and on Moedim. We're going to quote something from the volume there on Chumash and Parshas Para. They also put out by the shul. They put out. I think you can only buy it by the shul. I have a bunch of the volumes there. Shal Shudas Drashas from different years. They write up and put out. Shal Shudas there is a big deal. It's a serious place. That thing Nishmas is over 10 minutes. I think Pesukei Zimra on Shabbos morning is like, I think close to an hour. It's a. Yeah.
Shabbos davening was like a little bit less than 4 hours.
Yeah, I'm saying there's nothing. If you want, I mean, there's a beautiful Rabbi learned here who wrote a beautiful description of the davening there. There's something very. It's like it has the feeling of it's a very intense place. It's a place where it's a lot of people who are you get the feeling of this is a place where people are really trying to grow. So Rav Moshe Wilson's Torah is very, very beautiful. Rav Moshe Wolfson has an amazing observation. What's the root cause of Chet HaEgel? What's the root cause? He doesn't reference it, and let's not focus on the Rishonim. The Rishonim are describing what exactly the sin was. Moshe Wolfson said, what's the root cause of Chet HaEgel? What was behind Chet HaEgel? Moshe Wolfson suggests that we spoke about it before. Chet HaEgel and the Chet of Eitz Hadas are very similar sins. The Eitz Hadas was a Nefesh HaChayim, is even more true. The Eitz Hadas was a sin that transformed everything. Eitz Hadas, man is no longer going to be immortal. Everything changed as a result. Chet HaEgel is a sin that transformed everything for Klal Yisrael. Says Rav Moshe Wolfson, both of those sins are a result of one basic, fundamental flaw. A lack of patience. A lack of patience. Says Rav Moshe Wolfson, Iker Shmiras Hayadas, Hiknias Midas Hamasinas. What nothing sustains Klal Yisrael, protects Klal Yisrael, like patience. The sin of the Eitz Hadas, so the Arachaim quotes in Parshas Vayechi from Chazal, Adam and Chava would have been allowed to eat it on Shabbos. They just couldn't wait till Shabbos. They just couldn't wait. They had it on Friday. Just wait a little bit. But the patience was too hard. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't come down the mountain. And suddenly they start just going crazy. What are we doing without Moshe Rabbeinu? How are we going to survive without Moshe Rabbeinu? How's it going to go? They start struggling so much. Says to Moshe Wilson, you know what the problem was? They just couldn't wait another day. They should have just had the patience and the humility to stop and say, maybe we miscalculated. Maybe we miscalculated. That midah of patience, says to Moshe Wilson, that's pshat in Chazal, when Chazal say, all sin is rooted in Chet HaEgel. All sin's rooted in a certain sense in the Eitz Hadas. Because you know what sin often comes from? It comes from an incapacity. Just to stop sometimes and say, take things a little bit slower and wait it out, and it'll be okay. You have a taiva sometimes, the need to fill it right now. You'll get there one day. Just you don't have to get there right now. So much of our growth is what's the challenge of so much of our growth? So much of our growth in learning is that I want results right away, and I don't realize it takes time. It takes time. And sometimes if I don't feel like I'm getting there, and we're in a different world right now in the beginning of the year. The way that our learning, our ha'aras, we're always tzaddikim, the status of our learning, the ha'aras that we're making is so much better. But I sometimes don't feel that right away. And that lack of patience is what causes so much frustration. The inability to say, just to wait a little bit and things are going to be okay. Not waiting as a way of laziness. Not if you're waiting in your room all day, anything's going to come to you. He means waiting in a core midah, kind of actively waiting. It's the midah of a Jew is to actively wait. It's been a long time, and look at that, how amazing it is that we're still waiting for Mashiach. It's an amazing thing of the, you know. I always like the story. I have a friend of mine told this to me once. He heard this from about a certain tzaddik in Yerushalayim. The tzaddik is in Yerushalayim, and someone comes over, I think I said this before, and a person comes over to him and says, a tourist comes to the kotel, and the tourist has no shaykhus, knows nothing. And the tourist says to him, so is this where the Jewish temple is? He says, not yet, but it's going to be rebuilt soon. He said, is it going to be rebuilt this year? He says, I really think so. Is it going to be rebuilt this afternoon? It's really looking like it. I really think it's going to be. And he says it not as a joke, but from a real place in the moon. What a koach Klal Yisrael has. We've been waiting for a long time, and we're still waiting. It's part of our defining character trait, is the ability just to wait a little bit. That we want things to be so fast. We want that instant gratification. We want that to be to acquire this right now. And real things in this world always take time. Real things in this world always take just a little bit, just reassess a little bit, and it's all going to be good. Moshe Wolfson suggests, this is part of the Torah of Parshas Parah. We're not there right now, but it's such a beautiful insight. We know, I'll give you a little bit of background. In the Sefer Yetzirah, if I can... Now, your friend who was here last night has a schos of learning Sefer Yetzirah with someone that knows what he's talking about. I'll give you the basic of Sefer Yetzirah, which is what everyone quotes, and this is, you know, this is all you got to know. We know this idea, we're just attributing it to Sefer Yetzirah. He's learning it, you know, for real by one of the greats. Who learns here? Aga.
Really?
Yeah, he had a different last name then, but he learns here. He's so interesting. You should read his stuff. Anyway, he's a really interesting guy. Okay. Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. Things always work, says Sefer Yetzirah, on three levels. Place, Kedushas Makom, Kedushas Man, and Kedushas Adam. Makom, Zman, and Adam. Kedusha always works on three levels. People, there's holiness in people, some more holy, some less holy. There's holiness in place, some more holy and some less holy. There's holiness in time. So for example, you'll often talk about the Mila of Yom Kippur, is that in the holiest place, the Makom of Mikdash, the holiest time on Yom Kippur, the holiest person, the Kohen Gadol, it all comes together. Yom Kippur is the convergence of all the three different kinds of Kedusha that all come together. And we speak about that sometimes in different ways. You know, holiness of time, place. That's why Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael is more Kadosh. Because Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, when you have a Jew who's keeping Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, so that's a level below the Kohen Gadol, of course, Kadosh on Yom Kippur. But Shabbos is a level below Yom Kippur. And a Jew is, we're not Kohen Gadol, but we have Kedusha also. And Eretz Yisrael is, it's not Makom Mikdash, but it's still something. That's why the Jew keeps it. It's not just, when we keep Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, just to appreciate that a little bit. It's not, oh my God, we happen to be Jewish. I'm a Jew everywhere. It happens to be Eretz Yisrael. It's those three things combined together for a different experience. Those three things combined on Yom Kippur, those three things combined for us every time, every Shabbos. That's something which we should just, I think, just appreciate a little bit. Says with Moshe Wolfson, it's true in time also. It's true as far as development. You have earlier places and later places. Earlier places were very, very kadosh. The world's created in a certain sense from Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the beginning of the world. It's coming from Eretz Yisrael. Again, from where Kedusha sort of starts. Kedusha starts from Eretz Yisrael. Kedusha starts the beginning of the year, Nisan. It's a beginning. It could be that the world for some day is even created in Nisan. And it could be that the first generation to really experience that kind of Kedusha is the Dor HaMidbar. There are earlier generations, earlier times, and earlier places. As you start falling a little bit, so things become more distant, and things become what appears to be a bit less kadosh. Says Moshe Wolfson, we started out in Eretz Yisrael, in our time of real kedusha, we're starting from Eretz Yisrael. But look at the time, look how Gullus works. We've gotten progressively farther and farther from Eretz Yisrael. Gullus originally, so we went to Bavel. Gullus after that, so we're going to Sfarad, we're going to Europe. Gullus after that, now we're all the way in America. It's much further away. Some of us are much closer. Some of us are like really much closer, the ones who are, you know, in Eretz Yisrael. But it's much further away. We're becoming more and more distant as far as our Gullus. From that more kadosh place, over time we're becoming more distant. In the year, sometimes, in the beginning, there's more Kedusha. And as the year progresses, we also become further from that Kedusha. The end of Chodesh Adar, now the end of Chodesh Adar is sometimes a time period of less Kedusha. If you're a real Machshava person, that's why the end of Chodesh Adar is sometimes a harder time to learn. Why is the post-Purim, end of Chorav Zman, so challenging? So it's because, I'll leave the MS because it's the 6 month Chorav Zman, it's really intense. But also, because you're dealing with the end of a Chodesh, the end of a Chodesh Adar, it's the end of a time period. You're also dealing as far as generations. There are generations of Dor HaMidbar, and our generation, which is getting much, much more distant, is a generation of the Ikvah of the Mashiach, a generation that's going to witness Be'ezras Hashem, the Geula, generation that's like the Ekev, that's all the way, the ankle, all the way at the end. Moshe Wolfson suggests as follows. Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. Olam, Shana, and Nefesh also is a certain chronological development. There are beginnings of Kedusha, and there are ends of Kedusha. There are beginnings of Kedusha, Dor HaMidbar, Nisan, beginning of the year, Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, it's the beginning of Kedusha, and there are time periods where it's the end. There are time periods where it feels like a certain distance. It feels like distance because we're very far away. It feels like distance because it's the end of Chodesh Adar, it's the end where it's been so long since we had that new beginning. it feels at the end like with the Ikvas Mashiach, it's all the way to generations at the end. Says to Moshe Wolfson, what does a Jew have to do? What do we do at the end of Chodesh Adar? We always read Parshas Parah. We read about the Chet HaEgel. Why do we read about the Chet HaEgel? Because Jews, says to Moshe Wolfson, Jews who especially live in America, Jews who are in the generation of Ikvas Mashiach, need to remember the Yisod of Chet HaEgel. A little bit more. Just have that patience. Just wait a little bit more. Right now it looks like it's towards the end. It's the end of a Chodesh Adar. It looks like it's very dark. Just remember, in a little bit, as Hashem, it's going to be a time period of Nisan. Right now it looks like we're getting further and further away as far as Galus goes. Just wait a little bit, because at some point it's going to start again. We're going to come back to Yerushalayim, back to Eretz Yisrael. And right now it looks like we're a generation all the way at the end. It looks like we're a generation, if it's the Mashiach, things are so far like that. At some point, it's going to come all the way back together, and you're going to reach that stage again of a certain mile of that door daya of that generation that is so much holier and so much more there. What we tried to do today is the following. We tried to develop four insights, four different perspectives on Chet HaEgel. Let's just go over them nicely. Rashi understands that the Chet was a Chet of Avodah Zarah. We tried to explain for Rashi how Klai Yisrael could mess up with the Chet of Avodah Zarah. We tried to suggest that it gives us a little bit of a message as far as growth of ups and downs. The second idea that we mentioned is an idea from the Ramban. They wanted to substitute Moshe Rabbeinu, and the way the Meshach understands it, they misattribute it. The messenger, mixing up the messenger, the shliach, and the mishaleach. The third idea, the Kuzari, they wanted something tangible. The problem was they were looking for somewhere where the Baruch Shalom said, don't do this. There was no tzivoy to do that, and that was part of the problem. But Moshe Wolfson, the lack of patience, and again, we went a little bit, I hope it was okay, a little bit in the world of Machshava here, as far as Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. Different realms of Kedusha, time, person, and place. Sometimes in life, you're at the end of time. You're a person that one of the last generations. You're at a place which it seems to be very, very far. One of the defining characteristics of those Jews who end up being so successful is that capacity to just sometimes wait it out, be able to wait for a geula, to be able to wait for some of that growth, to put in the work, but not be frustrated by a lack of results right away, but to know and have emunah and have faith and clarity that results are going to come. We've been waiting a long time as a people. We've been waiting a long time as a people. It should be our tefillah that Klal Yisrael should have to wait no more. That we should be kona, not just the mid of waiting, but we should really be zocha to see kimala haaretz deya es Hashem, a certain kind of revelation that can come, and a certain kind of clarity that we've been waiting for so long. Shkaya, guys, have a wonderful Shabbos. The most awesome thing is that that was